We're holding on the top line of Chafala Fomadala. We were talking yesterday about cases involving walls that are about to collapse. So here we have a story that features one of those as well. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan have a garsi baraisa. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were learning Torah. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were learning Torah. And they were very poor. Amri, so they said, Nekum v'nezo v'navid iska, let's get up from here, we'll leave our learning for a while, we'll go and do business, on a time, an option, and in this way we'll be mekayim on ourselves, what the Pasuk says, Ephes ki lo yivacha avyen, however, there will not be among you any poor people.
Thank you, yes, thank you very much.
In context, the Pasuk is talking about the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, saying that if you do what the Yishter wants, and lo yivacha avyen, there won't be any poor people among you. But there's an Indian in it that means that you have to try to keep yourself from being poor. There's actually a halacha in that regard, shal chachodim l'chaladim. So they went, they left the yeshiva, and azlu oisvei tusa gudu re'ia. They went and sat next to a weak wall, a shaky wall. They didn't know it was shaky. Ben Yayada explains that on the side that they were sitting on, it looked strong, but from the other side, it would mostly crumble away. Habakkuk karchi rifta, and they're sitting over there and wrapping their bread, meaning eating lunch. Also, tshrei malach ha'sharis. Two malachim come over, and shamei Rabbi Yochanan to amachad l'chaber, and Rabbi Yochanan overhears that one of them is saying to the other, nishti alayu ha'iguda, let's throw down this wall on top of them, v'nichtalinu, and kill them. They did something wrong. Shema nichin chaya olam haba, v'oiskin b'chaya shah. They're abandoning the life of the eternal life of olam haba and being involved in chaya shah. So they're poor, big deal. Why are they leaving learning? Why are they leaving learning to go to work?
Because they're poor.
They originally left because they're poor. The malachim are arguing, ha'itachin. What are they doing? Leaving learning because they're poor. Big deal.
Naftali Berkowitz.
Hello. And especially the fact they were next to a weak wall. Yesterday we learned that a person shouldn't stand in Marcus Makana. In Shabbos also, in Gemara Shabbos, it talks about the idea that when a person is near a weak wall is one of those times when you need extra chusim to get out of that, and that's the kind of time when a kitrug against the person can have an effect. So here, the one malach is arguing that, you know, they're in that situation already, they're in a dangerous situation, they don't deserve to be saved from it. I'll let you do it, but the other malach tells them, Shavkinu, leave them alone. The ikabahu chad the kaimalei shaita, because there is one of those two people who's sitting over there who the hour is good for him, meaning he's going to become a great person, he's going to become a Rosh Hashiva. So for his sake, leave him both alone. Well, Rabbi Yochanan Shama, Rabbi Yochanan overheard the malachim saying this. Ilfa lo Shama, but Ilfa did not hear. Rabbi Yochanan Ilfa Shama Ma'amidi. So Rabbi Yochanan asked Ilfa, did you just hear anything? No. Omar, so Rabbi Yochanan thought to himself, since I heard it, Ilfa lo shama, and Ilfa did not hear it, shmami no l'didi, kaima l'shaita. That means, who is it the malach is talking about, the kaima l'shaita, who's going to become a great person, must be me.
My hour is going to be established.
Yes. In other words, yes, the malach must have been talking about me. It's in my tchus that we were just saved, and that means I have a great future ahead of me. Well, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Ilfa, you know what? I changed my mind. Ihader, I'm going to go back to the yeshiva, but Oiki ben Avshoyi, and I will fulfill on myself a different pasuk that says in that same parak, Kilo Yechtel Evin Mekarav Arif. They'll never be missing any poor people from the earth, from the land. Again, the simple meaning is you have one pasuk that's talking about when the Jewish people are doing what the Eivishter wants, there won't be any poor people, and the second one is talking about under normal circumstances when not everybody is following the Ratzon of Eivishter, then you have some poor people. But here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, originally we figured lo yivacha evyen, we have a responsibility to make sure we're not poor. Okay, but you know what? A person can be poor and still learn Torah. I'm going to go back and do that. So Rabbi Yochanan hader, Ilfa lo hader. So Rabbi Yochanan returned to the Beit Medrash, Ilfa did not. Because Ilfa hadn't heard anything, he didn't know there's anything going on. Ad Ot Ilfa, by the time Ilfa finally came back from his business trip, Molech Rabbi Yochanan had been appointed the next Rosh Hashiva. Now, why Taka did Rabbi Yochanan not tell Ilfa? Was that fair of him? So some of the Mepharshim say an interesting idea. Since Rabbi Yochanan had found out from this conversation of Malachim that he's going to be the Rosh Shiva, what does that mean? Now, Ilfa was greater than him, was a greater Talmud Chacham than him. That's why we started off, Ilfa for Rabbi Yochanan. That Ilfa was greater than Rabbi Yochanan. If they had both returned, they probably would have appointed Ilfa the new Rosh Shiva. But what's going to happen? Since it was Nigzam in a Shemayim that Rabbi Yochanan is going to be the Rosh Hashiva, what's going to have to happen? Ilfa is going to have to die young, or he's going to have to die earlier than expected in order that Rabbi Yochanan can become the Rosh Hashiva. He didn't want that to have to happen. So for Ilfa's sake, he didn't tell him. If he would have told him, then they both would have returned. The Bnei HaYeshiva, not knowing the whole conversation between the Malachim, would have appointed Ilfa the next Rosh Hashiva. But then he would have had to die to make way for Rabbi Yochanan. We had a similar thing at the end of Yuma where Rabbi Hanina didn't want to forgive Rav for perceived slight against him in order to force Rav to leave Eretz Yisrael and move to Babel, because Rabbi Hanina knew that Rav is going to become Rosh Hashiva. And again, the same thing. If Rav stays in Eretz Yisrael, then Rabbi Hanina himself is going to have to die to make way for him. So it's a similar idea.
Also, Mal Batra, where the
Rabbi
of the Rosh Shiva
says,
"Oh, I want to marry both of them."
That's true, right? Yeah, Rabbi Bahama and Rabbi, yeah, and Rabbi says, "I want to be the last one." Yeah, true. Yeah. Amr Loi. So they said. So when Ilfa came back, they said to him, "You should know something. E Osif Mar Vigaris. If you, Rebbe, had been sitting here and learning, Loi have a Molech Mar." Then there's two ways of explaining it. One is the question, Loi Hava Molech Mar, wouldn't you have become the next Rosh Hashiva? Or that's one way, that's what Tosfos says. The other way of explaining it is that they're making a statement. If you, Mar, meaning you, that you, Rebbe, had not left, then Mar, the other Mar, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, would not have become the next Rosh Hashiva, implying you were. Either way, the point is, they're telling him, you Taka are a bigger Talmud Chacham than you Taka are a bigger Talmud Chacham than Rabbi Yochanan. Well, Ilfa wanted to show that he still is as great a Talmud Chacham as he was before. That despite the fact he had been involved in business all this time, he hadn't lost any of his learning. So, Ozil Tolanafshe Biskaya Despinta. He went and hung from, or Tola can sometimes in the Gemara can sometimes also mean he leaned against the mast of a ship. Omar. And actually, this is very appropriate to his name. His own name, Ilfa in Aramaic, means a ship. So he says, Omar, Iika the Sholib Masnissa Rabchiyah Rab Oshia, if there is anybody who can ask me, who can bring to me something from the Brises of Rabchiyah and Rab Oshia, which are known to that's the only collection of, not the only, but it's one of the collections of Brises which is known to be very, very precise. A lot of times, you know, we have the Gemara will quote a Braisa, and then they'll say we have to fix up the wording, there's a mistake in it, you know, Hachi Ka'amar or whatever. With the Braisas of Rechia and Rabboshi, we don't have to do that. We had that before, yeah. So he says, if anybody can quote to me a Braisa from Rechia and Rabboshi, V'loi Pashtina Le Masnissin, and I will not be able to find a source for it in the Mishnah, the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Nafilnam Iskaya the Sphinta, then I will fall off this mast from the ship, the Tavina, and I will drown. Is he allowed to do that? So actually, Ben Yehuda says an interesting idea. He knew how to swim. If anybody comes to him with such a braisa and he can't answer it, fine, he'll dive off the mast. It'll look like he drowned, but of course he won't drown. He's not allowed to kill himself. He'll dive underwater and he'll surface. That's why, I mean, if it weren't for that, Ben Yehuda says, I mean, why does he have to go to the mast of a ship? He could have gone up to the roof of the Beis Medrash and said the same thing. The difference is, if he jumps off the roof of the Beis Medrash, obviously he's going to kill himself. Mashem from here, he can dive off and pretend like he drowned. There is an interesting idea.
They're supposed to see him coming out.
Okay, they'll see him coming out, but at least they'll realize how serious it was to him. There's also an idea, something along the lines of, he's arguing. Look, what, you know, Rabbi Yochanan accomplished why Taka did Rabbi Yochanan not tell me? Like we said before, so I don't become the next Rosh Hashiva and die young. Well, if anybody can ask me a braisa and I can't prove it from a Mishnah, it shows I'm not of the caliber to be the Rosh Hashiva anyway. If I'm not of the caliber to be the Rosh Hashiva anyway, then he didn't really gain anything. I didn't really gain anything. I might as well have drowned, basically.
Why didn't he do that?
What? Why didn't he do what?
Did he use this argument?
That's why he's using that argument. In other words, that's one explanation. So, sure enough, Asahu Sava, a certain old person came, and Mepharshim talk about the possibility that sometimes, a lot of times when the Gemara says Ahu Sava means Elio Anavi. Not necessarily always, and in this case also, there's some Mepharshim do say that indeed it was Elio Anavi, and others say that not, it was just an old Talmud Chacham. Whatever it was, Tunale, and he taught him the following Braisa. He asked him the following Braisa. I want you to give me a source for it in the Mishnah. Braisa says, if somebody says before he dies, he says to the trustees or to whoever's taking care of his estate on behalf of the orphan, give a shekel per week to my children. Give a shekel to my children per week. Shabbos doesn't mean on Shabbos. It means every week. So he asks, and he tells him to give him a shekel out of the estate every week. But behind Ruyan Losses Lam Sela, really they deserve to be given a Sela, because a shekel is not enough to live on. There's two shekels to a Sela. So they need twice as much as the father thought they need. Noisan Lam Sela. Then fine, you give them a Sela, because he didn't mean that they should only give them a shekel. He thought a shekel would be enough. He thought that Rashi says over here he wanted to be mezarez them. He wanted to urge them, don't just live off the estate. Go do business, go learn how to earn money. But if the trustees see that in fact, even with that, they're trying to work, but nevertheless, a shekel is not enough for them, then they give them a seller. But, continues the Braise, but if the father says to the trustee, don't give them anything but a shekel, meaning no more than that, well then, ain't no sin lahem el a shekel, and you only give them a shekel, and if that's not enough for them, tough luck. So they'll have to go begging or whatever it is. So they'll have to work harder on business. And the Braise continues, im oma mesu, Yushua chenem tachteim. And one more thing, if the father says that if the children die, then other people, instead of their own children, or their own relatives or whatever, should inherit them, then bein sha'ama tnu, bein sha'ama al titnu, then whether he said, give them a shekel, or whether he said, only give them a shekel, either way, ein nosen lahem el a shekel, then you only give them a shekel. Why? Because if he's saying, imesu yushua chenem tachteim, then it means he wants that as much as possible the estate should be preserved for that next group of people who he wants to inherit it. So therefore, you don't want to give them more than a shekel because that's going to deplete the estate faster. Now, so this Ahu Sava is telling Ilka where the Mishnah that implies this that implies this whole concept. Amalei, so Ilka tells him, "Homani Reb Meir, this is according to Reb Meir. Dama mitzvah l'kayim, divrei ha'mes." The mayor says that it's a mitzvah to fulfill whatever a mess says, and actually those aren't the actual words that a mayor uses in the Mishnah. The actual case says that the Mishnah in Ksubas that discusses a case where a person appointed a trustee to give his daughter after she gets married to use some money to buy her some land or something. So what happens if the daughter says, the Mishnah says today, what happens if the daughter says, you know what, I don't need the trustee, I trust my husband, give the money to my husband, let him go buy the land for me. Nevertheless, the mayor says, no, the shalish, the trustee, still has to do what he was told, because the principle is mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'mes. So based on that Mishnah, we can derive this whole concept in the Braise. So that was Ilfa's point. I'm in a number of places in the city to talk about the idea of that. The idea is that what's briefly in the Mishnah is in more detail in the Braise, because the Mishnah is on a higher level than the Braise, so therefore it includes in potential what the Braise brings out in actuality. Why Dafka does Ahu Sava tell him Dafka this Braise out of all the possible Braises in the world? There's a couple of different explanations. One of them is from the Chacham Sofer. What do we see from the Braisa? We see that there's a case where even though a shekel is not really enough for these sons to live off from week to week, but if he said give them only a shekel, or if he said another person is going to inherit the estate afterwards, then that's it. You give them only a shekel. They're going to be poor. Okay, so they'll be poor. What does that mean then? That supports what Rabbi Yochanan said. Kilo yechta lavin mekedav ha'aretz. So you're poor, big deal. At least you're learning Torah. And so therefore, therefore by bringing that Braisa, and Ilfa saying, you know what, I approve of what that Braisa says, it goes according to the mayor, that's in effect. Ilfa saying, you know what, I changed my mind. I realize that it's true. I wasn't right after all to begin with in saying that, we have a responsibility not to be poor. No, a person, it's not so bad. A person is poor under some circumstances, then fine.
It goes both ways. You said recently, just now, it could impoverish their estate and make other people poor.
No, but that's other people. We're talking about himself. Right. Of course, you can't make somebody else poor. That's a given. That's one explanation. A different word, different explanation from Ben Yehoyada is the Ahu Sava is asking is exactly that. Isn't the reason for the din more because you don't want to deprive the other people? Which, in other words, the implication is you, Ilfar, saying that you, Ilfar, trying to prove you're a greater Talmid Chacham than Rabbi Yochanan, aren't you worried that's gonna harm him? They may end up deposing him as a Rosh Hashiva and appointing you instead. And Ilfar answers that's not the reason for that behind the Braise. The reason is because this was the time of Rabbi Mess. It has nothing to do with the situation between me and Rabbi Yochanan. Another case involving a house that was about involving a building that was about to collapse. Actually, before we leave the story, there are a couple of interesting things about it. There's a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein where he talks about carving out some of the day in a yeshiva, carving out some of the day to learn the mudbechol for the sake that the kids should be able to learn parnasa. And he points out based on our gemara, that's not such a simple thing. Manishim chaya olam va'yishim chaya shah. How can you be abandoning the life of olam haba to do something for chaya olam haza? Like Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan.
The real, balance between Olam Havayah and Rabbi Yochanan. The Rambam says, absurd.
But it all depends. I mean, there is an interesting explanation that I saw. So, why Taka did Rabbi Yochanan change his mind and Ilfa not? It's not just because of the conversation with the Malachim. The difference is Rabbi Yochanan came from money. There's a medrash someplace where Rabbi Yochanan, in his old age, says to Rabbi Abba, I used to have vast estates, and I sold them all in order to be able to focus on learning Torah. So Rabbi Yochanan figures to himself, okay, maybe one day I'll be old and I'll be poor. Meanwhile, at least I have what to live off of. I won't be, I'll be able to manage. And actually, when they ended up appointing him Rosh Hashiva, also Rashi points out, Ma'ashirinoi, so they gave him money, because Rosh Hashiva is supposed to be Gadleo Mishalachov. You make him greater from among his brothers, like with a Kohen Gadol. Ilfa may not have been. This verse, I think, is from Reuven Margolius. Ilfa may not have been from money. So he had no choice. He has to go work for a living, or else he's not going to be able to focus on his learning. So, it partly depends on that kind of thing.
Someone who doesn't have enough to sustain
may not have a choice, because the Rambam talks very sharply against somebody who takes money from the tzibur in order to learn Torah. Although, again, nowadays, not necessarily does that always apply. I mean, you do have the concept of a kolol, where people, where people are paid by the tzibur in order to learn.
What about some people, their wives work and they run...
Is that too? Yeah. Yeah.
So what is?
Okay, so what about that? I mean, so then if you have somebody who's able to support you, then, One idea also in this connection, that's why Dafka Ilfa goes to the top of the mast, besides that thing from Ben Yehoyada before about that he's going to dive, is also he wants to show basically, okay, so I'm not Yisachar, I didn't stay sitting and learning the whole time. I'm like Zvulun, fine, I went out on business. Still doesn't mean that I'm any less of a Talmid Chacham than that. Yeah. Anyway.
The Rambam says, in the Talmud Torah, someone who works and learns has a bigger shus.
But that's the thing, in a way, yes, in a way, not. If you have a person who's able to live, for example, off a trust fund or whatever, that's different, yeah. Or, yeah, I mean, the Rambam doesn't talk anything about a person's wife supporting him, but fascists, that's not necessarily a problem either. I mean, we know back in the old days it was a very common thing, and even nowadays you have people who do that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, so whatever, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about it, pro and con, but, there is at least room to say that it's definitely good. Okay. Amru all about Nachum Ish Gamzu. They said about Nachum Ish Gamzu, Sheyestuma Mishtei Enov, he was blind in both eyes. Gidim Mishtei Yadav, he was amputated, both of his hands were amputated. Kikeya Mishtei Ragla, both of his feet were amputated as well. V'chol Gufay Molishkin, and his whole body was covered with boils. V'hayamutu B'bayiz Ra'ua, and he was lying over there on a bed in a shaky house. Not necessarily always, that wouldn't have been a right thing to do, but one time it happened, and that's it. Something brought him food. The ragli mitosim unachan b'tzvolim shomayim. The legs of his bed had to be put into basins of water. Kedeshal yalo all of nemalim, so that ants don't crawl up on him, because he doesn't have hands to brush them off. Pam machas toisim mitosim unachas b'aytzeruah. So one time his bed is in that shaky house, and it wasn't a regular thing, but one time it happens. They put him in a house. They didn't realize it was shaky, but now afterward they realize, and they got to get him out of there. So somebody wanted to get his bed out of there as fast as possible before the house collapses, and then we'll go back in and get the furniture and whatnot. Amalami tells them, do it the other way around. Bonai, my children, panuas akelim, take out the furniture, v'achakach panuas mitosi, and then take out my bed. Shemuv tachochem, you can be guaranteed, kol zman shani rabayis, as long as I am in this house, ain't rabayis noble, then the house will not collapse. Now, how can he say that on himself? We have said before that a person should not stand in a makom sakana. There's a few different answers. One is, Marshal says he knew on himself he was tzadik gomer. So in that case, he has a right to rely on that. The Gvura Sari from the Shagas Aryeh gives a different explanation. He says that before we had, you're going into a place of sakana. Here, he's already there. There needs to be a constant nest that the house shouldn't fall down anyway. That the nest will have to last a little longer so that they can clear out the furniture first. Fine, that's not, it's not the same thing as actually going in there like a killer.
It
for sure enough, pinuas akelim v'achakach pinuas mitase. So they cleared out the dishes and the furniture, and afterwards they took out his bed, the nafal abayis, and the house fell down. Amru le tamidim, so tamidim said to him, Rebbe, v'chimeachash a tzadik gomer atzah, since you're obviously a tzadik gomer, lama also l'chakach, why did this happen to you? Why are you in this situation?
I don't know, it never happened to me. It's way down.
Amalahem, he tells them, Bonai, ani goramti la'atmi. I caused it to happen to myself. No, not that I'm in this situation with my hands and feet chopped off and boils, etc. One time I was traveling on the road to my father-in-law's house. And I had with me three donkeys. There were three loaded donkeys. Echot shel Michael, one carrying.
Let's not do it on such a small area.
No, it's not a matter of a small area. It's a matter of that a person has to have a little seichel. It doesn't matter of putting the number of acts of a fire.
Okay,
then fine. We should have put a would have, but, a person can also be a little kid. No? I had with me three donkey loads of food. Echad shel Michael, echad shel Mishta, echad shel Minim Agadim. One of food, one of drink, and one of different kinds of delicacies. Va'ani echad, va'amad li baderech. A poor person comes and stands in the road. Va'amad li Rebbe, panaseni. He says, Rebbe, give me food. Amarti lo, I tell him, hamten, atche efrek min hachamor. Wait until I unload the donkey. Lo yispakti lifrek min hachamor. I didn't have a chance to finish unloading from the donkey. Atche yotze nishmasei. Before his neshama left him, he died. In other words, Nachum didn't realize how bad off the person is. Yeah. Halachri rafalti upon him, so I went and fell on his face. Va'amarti, and I said, Einai shalachotu aleinecha, my eyes that did not have rahmanus on your eyes to notice from your eyes how sick you are. Yosumu deserve to be blinded. Yodai shalachotu aleinecha, my hands that did not have rahmanus on your hands to just what do I have to unload the donkey, rip open a bag, and give him something. Yisgadmu deserves to be cut off. Ragleh shalechotu aragleha, my feet that did not have rachmanis on your feet to jump off the donkey as fast as possible. Yisgatu deserves to be chopped off. Blend is scattered a daiti, and then I still didn't calm down. I still didn't feel I'd done enough. Atshamarti kol gufa yehim al shchin. Till I said my whole body should be full of shchin. Why? Because a shchin is similar to tzara'ach. Mitzvah, chashuv kemet. So that'll be like this person who died. The Yerushalmi in Peah tells the story a little bit differently. It says that actually that Nachum had told the guy not wait until I unload the donkey, but wait till I get back to my father-in-law's house, which would have been even longer. Mela, at least with unloading the donkey, fine. You can argue you have to do that in order to get the stuff in the sack, but he has to go to his father-in-law's house. Why? So he blamed himself. There's an interesting vote on this from Rav Yonasan Eibeshit that we know it happens. You hear occasionally in the news, less so nowadays or whatever, that somebody in a position of authority or whatever really messed up, and so they hand in their resignation. You know, I don't deserve to have the job anymore if I don't do the job properly. So here Nachum is basically saying these various parts of my body didn't do their job properly. So they deserve to. They deserve to. Normally, a person shouldn't say that I deserve to have it happen to me, right? But in a case of a tzaddik gomer where he wants to do it, so he gets his full tzar in another matter, then yeah, you know, I mean, the average person is not on that level anyway. Amrulai, so that's what they told him. Oilonu shirinuchabakach, achenvei to us, that we had to see you in this state. Amrulai, says, on the contrary, oilim loiri shirinuchabakach, how bad it would be for me if you had not seen me this way, because then I would have lost some of my place in Al-Mahaba. One idea is, some of the Farshim say, it's not so much he blamed himself for the guy's death in a way like, okay, you know, he couldn't have helped it. He's trying to get to him as fast as possible. But the very fact, he thought to himself, the very fact that the Eibishter arranged things this way, that he wound up meeting the guy when it was too late, that itself he realized to himself there must be something that matters. Yeah. So why do they call him Nachum Ishgamzu? Because anything that would happen to him would say Gamzu L'Toyva. Actually, Mepharshim point out that actually the original reason why it was called Nachum Ishgamzu is there's a city in Eretz Yisrael called Gimzai. It's mentioned in Divrei Yom. They originally was called Nachum Ishgimzai, but then they changed it to Gamzu because of its slogan, Gamzu L'Toyva.
Also, comparison was, like, I remember hearing one of the things we can say about ourselves, okay, what's happening to me is good, but what happened to this person that died, that's not true.
Zimnechada boil shaduri Yisrael during the bekei. So one time the Jewish people had to send a present to the emperor. Amrus, they thought, man Yezel, who should go deliver it? Yezel Nachum Ishgamzu, let Nachum Ishgamzu go. Demalumad benissim, who he's used to having nissim happen to him.
But
this is before this all happened. Shadru b'yadim loy sifta davanim tovus magal. So they sent with him. They sent him with a box full of jewels and precious stones. Also, Bas Bahujira, he went and stayed overnight at a certain inn. Beloya Kamuhanach Viroi, during the night, the people in the inn came, got up in the middle of the night. Veshaklinu, they realized what's in the box. Veshaklinu Lasifte, they took the box. Umalunu Afra, and they filled it, they took out all the jewels and whatnot, and they filled it up with dirt. The next day when he saw it, he said Gamzu L'Toyva. Actually, so it's in parenthesis over here because Marsha says that the Marsha takes that out because, what? I mean, he's not, you know, if he knows the box is full of dirt, it'd be suicidal to go to the Kesar at this point. And he should turn around and go home. Other Mepharshim say, no, we should be good at this, either because, yes, he was on that level of Betachin, that he knew that the Eibishter will make things work out for him, or Rabbi Yaakov Enden says he had no choice. He has to get there in a hurry. He has an appointment. So he has no time to go back. All this stuff to make do.
So it would just be more of
an embarrassment. Kima Tahasim, so when he came to the emperor's palace, Sharinu L'Sifte, he opened up the box, Chazanu, Demalo Afra, they saw it's full dirt. So now the king is ready to kill all the Jewish, not just Nachum Ishgamzu, but all the Jewish people. How are you talking? They're insulting me like this. Omer, because he says, the Jews are laughing at me. Omer, Gamzu L'Toyva. So Nachum still doesn't faze. He says, Gamzu L'Toyva. Also, Elio, idmi lekechad minayu. Elio came and made himself to be in the image of like one of the Romans, one of the Roman officials. Amalei, he said to the emperor, Duma ha Afram Afrad Avram Avu, and who? Maybe this dirt is from the same dirt that their father Abraham used, the Chiabeshadu Afra Abu Saife, when he would throw dirt at the four kings, when he was fighting against the four kings, then it turned into swords. Gili, and when he threw straw, Havu Giri, it became arrows. Dichtim, like the positive, Yitin Ka'opra Chabra, he makes his sword like dust. He makes his bow like a straw that blows around in the wind.
That refers to
Avraham Avinu. Yeah, the previous pasuk before that, Mihei Mimizrach Tzedek Yikreelu Raglai, who arose from the east and Tzedek goes along wherever he goes. That's Avraham Avinu, who came from the east, from Babel. So there was a certain country that they, until now, they weren't able to conquer. But they tried out some of this dirt, the Kapshua, and they were able to conquer it. So they knew it really is a Avraham Avinu's dirt.
What did they do? They just threw,
the dirt, and it turned into spears and arrows. Yeah. I will obey Ginze, so they went into the king's treasury. They filled up the chest with jewels and precious stones. Vishadru, Vikaradaba, and they sent him away with great honor. Peace. Obviously, yeah, because now he knew it's not the Jewish people are not making fun of me. They sent me a very valuable gift. Actually, one of the Mefarshim and Eniakov points out, and the Rebbe also similarly once pointed out in the Sicha, in a way it worked out, in a way it was better, this gift. Jewels and precious stones, fine, a king's treasury is full of those. Avraham Avinu's dirt, that's something you can't get anywhere else. So actually, the Rebbe explains in a Sicha in Chelek Beis that that's the difference between we have Nochum Ish Gamzu, saying Gamzu L'Toiva, and we have Rebbe Kiva with the story in Brachas over there with his candle and his rooster and whatever, saying Kol Mada Ovid Rachmana L'Tab Ovid. The difference is, number one, Gamzu L'Toiva is in Hebrew, Kol Mada Ovid Rachmana is in Aramaic. Hebrew is on a higher level. Nochum Ish Gamzu is closer to the time of the Mishmikdash. This was Pashas after the Churban, but it still there's more of a Gilui of the curse in the world than his time. So therefore, he's saying it in Hebrew, whereas Rabbi Akiva, the next generation, Rabbi Akiva was one of Nochum Ish Gamzu's Talmidim, is saying it in Aramaic. Second of all, the difference is in Rabbi Akiva's case, it was something that was bad, but there came good out of it. The fact that he didn't have his rooster, they didn't hear him. The fact that he didn't have his candle, they didn't see him, etc. But the fact itself, that he was left in the dark by like that overnight was not such a good thing. Whereas here, the thing itself was a good thing, Hatzila, that he brought this chest full of dirt because it was special dirt.
So if you say that you are glorious the fact that he opened it up and saw that it was our part, then you have to say that he had
tremendous amount of tachanun. That's how some Mefarshim say it. He was on that level of tachanun. Yeah.
Because Rabbi Akiva only had to do was waiting for one night. Yes, when he had gone on a trip that was a month or whatever.
True. Yeah. Yeah. So, ki osu, when they came back, bisu bahu diura, they stayed over, and apparently it's not Nochum Ish Gamzu, it's whoever went along with him, and his entourage, they stayed over in the same hotel. Omrule, they asked him, my Isis badoch, the abdilach yukara kulahai, would you bring with you, it's the whole entourage that we just said, the emperor sent with him, the yukara rabba, with great honor, meaning with soldiers, with an honor guard of soldiers. So the innkeepers ask him, my Isis badoch, what do you bring with you, da abdilach yukara kulahai, that they did for you such covered. Omrule, he says, my deshakli bahacha amti lahasam, whatever I took from here, when I left here, is what I brought over there. He doesn't want to tell them that he was wise to their scheme. So Sostru Ledunaihu, so the people who lived in that inn tore down the building, and they brought all that dirt to the king. They figured, oh, you know, we have a good thing going over here, we'll bring all this dirt, we'll get a bigger reward. Omrulay, hi Afra Daisihacha. Yes, the same king. Omrulay, they said, hi Afra Daisihacha, this dirt that previously was brought to you, Mididanhu, it comes from our backyard. So you should try this also. But Kuovalash, before they tried it out, it didn't work. Katlinu lahanach diyuroi, and so they executed these innkeepers. And that's what was coming to them. The Mishnah said, "Ezu idever ir hametziya chamesh meisragli chula." What's considered an epidemic that you fast and blow a shofar for is when you have, for example, a city where 500 people go out of it every day to work, and then you have 3 mason come out of it in 3 days in a row. Turn it up. Why don't we learn it a bit? Ir hametziya chamesh meisragli chula. If you have a city that every day they'll come out of it 1,500 people, for example, Kfar Akre in those days had a population of 1,500. And again, we talked about the other day, the 1,500 able-bodied men. Yeah, 1,500 able-bodied men. Yeah. We also have a tisha mason, b'shloshi yom zachah. Then you have 9 mason coming out of it 3 days in a row. Who knows, 3 every day. How is it deber? Then that's considered an epidemic. But if it's on 1 day or on 4 days, ain't a deber, then that's not a deber because, okay, you know what happens? People die. That's not a serious enough thing to start out. It's just, there's no specific name for it. Because, so it's 1,500 people, so therefore you need 3 times as much. The Ir HaMetzia Chamesh Meisragli, and if you have a city where 500 people come out of it, you're Kfar HaMikoi, the Yosef Men HaShloisha Meisim B'Gimel Yom HaZachah, then 3 Meisim come out of it on 3 days of succession, Harei Zadever, then that would be a Dever. Yom Echad Ebabal Yom, if it's 1 day or 4 days, ain't Zadever, then that's not considered a Dever. So in other words, it's the idea you have one person per day per 500 people. No, because it's 1 day, so that's the thing. It's 1 day, so it's not necessarily that's become a regular thing. It's a one time thing. You know, you don't start declaring fasts and whatnot for one time thing. Okay, that's a little different. I mean, you're talking about most of the city. You know, besides, I mean, we're not saying you shouldn't say tilim or whatever. We're talking about to declare official fast and then blow shofar and say anenu, Hashem anenu, etc. That not necessarily. The Gemara tells a case. Drukeres iramatia chamesh meesrag. We have a Drukeres was a city that had 500 people. Rashi brings a different gear, so it wasn't Drukeres. That the name of the city was Yudkeres. It was called Yud because it was a tiny city. It had only 500 people in it. Like a Yud, it's a tiny letter. So it had 500 people. The Yosef men, a Shloisha Mesim, Yem Echad, and three dead people came out of it all on 1 day. Gozer of Nachum Baruch Chista Tanisa. So Nachum Baruch Chista declared a Tanis, like you said. So what happened? So it's all on 1 day. It should also be. It's a serious thing. Amr of Nachum Yitzchak, but Nachum Yitzchak tells him, why? Keman Kerab Meir. Who is that like? That seems to be according to the mayor. The Omar, who says, in the case of a Shura Muad, the din by a Shura Muad is it has to gore 3 times before it's considered Muad. And the Chachamim say it has to be over there that it gores on 3 successive days. But Rameyah says, Richik Mikhois of Chayev, if it made its gorings are far apart, each one is on a different day, then that's already considered a Mord. Kirib Mikhois of, like Holshkein, if they're close together, if it's all on 1 day, how much more so it should be considered a Mord? So Rav Nachman Yitzchok is telling him, you want to say that if the 3 masons come out on 3 days, the Dever, how much more so if they come out on 1 day? That could only be according to the mayor, but the halacha is not like him. Other Mepharshim explain differently, actually. Rav Nachman Yitzchok is asking him, even according to the mayor, Kaman, Rav Meir. This isn't even like Rav Meir. Even Rav Meir would say over there by the Shur Amur, that's different over there. You know, when the ox itself becomes established as a Muad. Here we're trying to establish, you know, is there a pattern over here? It's all in 1 day. It's still only a 1 day thing. Yeah. And actually, there's an interesting sidelight on that in halacha. We know there's the din where we know there's the din that after you start saying Masha Baruch Amor Dageshem or Amor Datol, the case may be, if you say it, you know, if you say it 90 times or if you say it 90 times in succession, then already it's considered, you know, you've gone as if you've gone through the whole 30 days, and now if you're not sure which one you said in Shemoneh Esrei, you can assume you said it according to your Hegel. So Mepharshim on Shulchan Aruch point out that could only be according to this idea over here, Kirav Nigechayis of Leikol Shekein. But that taka works, because the same way as your mayor would say it works by a shirt on the wood, where then, okay, you know, it was all 3 times in 1 day, but still, the shirt is now established as that it gores. So the same thing, it's now established that you did it all in 1 day rather than spread over 30 days, fine, but it's established now, you've established that now this is the nut that you're going to be saying, as opposed to when it comes to a dever, that you want to say that there's a pattern going on over here. Speaking of these two Amiroim, Amalei Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista Lo Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Leikumar Leisel Gaban, let the Rebbe get up and come over here. What does that mean? Rashi says Rav Nachman Yitzchok was sitting among people who were not so important. Some Mepharshim say it means literally sitting, like in shul or whatever. Other Mepharshim say it means he was living in a place where they're not such important people. So Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista is inviting him to come sit or live by us. Amalei, so Rav Nachman Yitzchok tells him, I don't need to. Tanena, we learn in the Braisa. Rav Yosef, it's not a person's place that gives him cover. El Adam Machabit Machaimah. It's rather a person brings Kabbat to the place where he is. He's bringing them covered in a way, yeah. Shekain Matsina Bahar Sinai. So we find it is by Har Sinai. Shekol Man Shah Shekhinah Shrul Yo'olav. As long as the Shekhinah is resting on Har Sinai, Omer Torah Gamathon Vahabaka Al Yuru Al Mullah Harabu. The Torah says that either that cattle and sheep are not allowed to graze by the mountain. Nistaka Shekhinah, but as soon as the Shekhinah leaves, Omer Torah Vahabaka Chayev Al Hema Yalav Ahar. As soon as the Shofar blows to show that the Shekhinah has gone away, then they can all go up the mountain. Which actually Rashi points out it was a little longer than that. It wasn't really right after Matan Torah. It was actually the Shekhinah stayed on Har Sinai for almost the whole year until the Mishkan was set up on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So the Shekhinah was there for about 10 months. But still, eventually there came a point where it's over. And that's it, because only Ha'adam Machabed is Machaim, the same way as the Shekhinah brings honor to the place. V'chein Matzina ba'oyel moed shebamidbar. So also we find with the oil moed in the desert. Shekol Zman Shu Nasri, as long as it's spread out, as long as it's set up. Omer Torah v'yishalcho namachna kol tzorua. The Torah says you have to send away from the machna anybody who has tzoras, zovim, etc. Everybody has their own zones that they have to be out of. Huglulu ha-pareches, but once they roll up the pareches, once they're taking apart the Mishkan, and everybody's getting ready to break camp and travel, huter zovim mam tzoraim lekanistrum, then all of a sudden the zovim and the tzoraim are allowed to come back into the camp, or even walk on the ground where the Mishkan was. So the Yeah, so we see it lost its kedusha. So the same thing, in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying that I don't have to come over to your place. The fact that I'm here is giving it covered. Amalei, so Rav Nachman Baruch Chitz. No, well, we did say kedusha Rishai. No, yeah, like it shalat above. Yeah, that's a different thing. That's more because the Jewish people conquered it, and so once it was conquered from them, then it lost its kedusha. The second time around, they didn't do it by conquest; they do it by chazaka, and therefore it still has its kedusha.
And also in the way of Eretz Yisrael today, that Eretz Yisrael is getting more notoriety as there's more Jew people there, and they're creating more Jews.
Okay. Amalei, so Rav Nachman Baruch Chitza tells him, Ihachi, well, if that's the case, fine, you don't want to come to me. Nekumano, Gavimar, so let me get up and come to you. Amalei, so Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, don't. Mutter yove mona ben prat, it's a mona ben mona. Better that the mona, the son of a prat is half of mona. A mona is 100 dinar, a prat is 50, is 50 dinar. So a mona ben prat should better come, it's a mona ben mona, to come and see the mona ben mona. Meaning, in other words, he's saying effectively, you, Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisda, are a mona ben mona. You're a Talmud Chacham, and your father, Rav Chisda, was a Talmud Chacham. Me, I'm Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. My father was not called Reb. He wasn't a Talmud Chacham, or at least he wasn't a Talmud Chacham of the same caliber. So it's better that I who come from a Pashto family should be coming to you. Val yovem mona ben mona, it's a mona ben pras. Rather than that the mona ben mona, you should be coming to the mona ben pras. Now, how is he putting down his father like that, calling him a pras? A lot of different explanations that various mepharshim give. One of them is that Adrabba is saying. He's pointing out my father may not have been a Talmud Chacham, but he was a pras. He had masim tovim. Okay, he wasn't zeichut to be a Talmud Chacham, but he has at least ma'asim tovim. That's he has that going for him. There's also some mepharshim point out. We see throughout Shas he's always called Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. Why? Because there were other Rav Nachmans in those times, so they had to call him by his father's name to distinguish him. But everybody always called him that. So everybody knew as soon as you mention his name, everybody automatically knows his father is not a Talmud Chacham. So there's no embarrassment in saying that after all his father is a prophet.
But also. He still got out from to be so he's like not from nothing better his but he is not often mentioned the more
not as often. And we actually had to explain why then. We had to explain why they said that. One of them being that it was actually a kapara for them to mention that. But over here, for him saying about his father that he's a prop is not a kapara for him.
Everybody knows he's a prop.
Yeah. Anyway, what was actually going on over here, Ben Yehuda explains that Pashat, they were sitting in the Bismedrash. Rav Nachman Baruch Chista wants to talk in Torah with Rav Nachman Yitzchok, so he offers to Rav Nachman Yitzchok to come join him, to move from his place in Shul, in the Bismedrash or whatever, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok turns him down. So he says, in that case, Nekom Arnola Gabi Mao, he says, okay, don't leave then, please let me come over to you, and let's sit and talk. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, oh, if that's what you wanted, then fine. You know what? Better than in that case, fine. I'll come over to you so we can talk and learning. The Surah Havas Dvarta. One time in the city of Surah, there was a dever. There was a plague, an epidemic. But in Rav's neighborhood in Surah, there was not this epidemic. So the people thought, Mishum Schusa de Rav the Nopish. It must be because of Rav's great schus. It's Chazilahu Bechamu, but they saw in a dream. No. Rav the Nefishas Chusa Tuva, Rav who has such great schusim, Hamilsa Zutrale. Such a thing would be a small thing for him. In other words, you don't need his schusim for that purpose. So what's the point? I mean, obviously, if his schusim are great enough for much more, then they should be great enough to save the neighborhood. So Marsha says the point is they're being told, don't think it was from Rav's schusim that's going to be subtracted from his schusim. There's somebody else's schus. There's also an interesting idea that some of Farshim say that they're being told like this. You should know something. Really, Rav's schus would be enough to save the whole city, not just the neighborhood. But you guys don't listen to him. He tries to get you to do the right thing, and you're not listening to him. So you can't really rely on a schus at all, even the neighborhood. Elamai, there's somebody else. Elam, Mishumahu Gavra, the Shai of Moro's Villa, the Kvura. It's because there's a certain person in your neighborhood who always lends out a rake and a shovel for burials. So therefore, in his schus, nobody in this neighborhood had to be buried. A similar case, Bidrukeres Havitz Lekasa, in Drukeres there was once a fire, over Shibavosti, did Rav Huna, why Havitz Lekasa, but in Rav Huna's neighborhood in that city, the fire didn't spread. Again, Sovim Minobis Chos of Rav Huna Dunafish, so they thought it's in the Chos of that because of the great Chos of Rav Huna. It's Chazilahu Bechalma, they saw in a dream, no, Hai Zutrulele Rav Huna, that would be a small thing for Rav Huna's Chos. Again, if it had been his Chos, the whole city might have been saved. Ella Mishumahi Itza, but it's because of a certain woman in the neighborhood, the Mechamemes Tanura, she heats up her oven, or Meshaila the Shivavosa, and she lends it out to her neighbors. So in that chus of heating up her oven, firing up her oven, the fire didn't affect the neighborhood.
Because she lit
the oven and lent it out to her neighbors for people who didn't have firewood of their own. Yeah, Ms. Midakanegamid, exactly. More on cases when you do and don't declare fast. Amr Lele Rav Yehuda, Aisukam, Osukamsi. They one time told Rav Yehuda, locusts are coming. So Gazer Tanisa, he declared fast. Amr Lele, but they told him, why? You don't have to be in such a hurry. Loikamastaban, they're not harming anything. Okay, there are locusts jumping around, but they're not actually eating the fruit. Amr Lele, he says, why? Did they bring provisions with them? Obviously not. Then maybe right now they're not hungry, but within the next couple of days, yeah, they're going to get hungry and start attacking everything. So we have to declare the tiniest now. Okay, you know, temporarily they overate before they came here. Marsha says a little bit differently. He was saying to them, like a little bit sarcastically. You're thinking zvada also bahadayu. You're thinking you shouldn't have to fast. Fine, zvada also bahadayu. Go find the provisions. Go find the picnic baskets that they brought along with them, and you can eat out of those. Another case, Amr Leila Rav Yehuda, Ika Moisana Bachaziri. They once told Rav Yehuda that there's an epidemic, or an epizootic actually it's called, whatever, going on among the pigs. Gaza Tanisa, so he declared a fast. Why? Name of Kasav Rav Yehuda, Makash Mishlachas, Miminacha Mishlachas Mikolaminin. Does that mean that Rav Yehuda holds that if there's a plague, that there's a maka against one species, that's against everybody? So therefore, it's going to affect humans also. Answer is loy. No, not necessarily. Shiny chaziri, pigs are different to damien me'ayu livnei inshi, because their intestines are similar to people's. Unlike, for example, horses or sheep or other kosher or various kosher animals or whatever that have four stomachs or three in the case of camels have three. The marshal pigs have a similar digestive system to ours.
They don't have a pouch.
Yeah. So therefore, if a plague, if an epidemic is affecting pigs, then yes, it's very likely to jump to people. We see nowadays a lot of times flu viruses go from birds to pigs and then to people.
And also that pigs' lungs and all those kind of things can also be transmitted very easily.
The Rebbe once pointed out an interesting thing. You know, we always talk about that eating chazer is an example of a chayk. Why if it's chazer? What about all the other tereif animals? The answer is because with the other tereif animals, fine. You can say, you know, the famous expression that the Rambam gives in Moreh Nebuchim, that these animals have a certain kind of nature that we don't want to transplant into ourselves. Cruelty or whatever, you know, gluttony or whatever. Pigs, they have the same kind of digestive system as ours, which means they digest their food the same way we do. You can even raise a pig on completely kosher food, and it'll be, you know, and nevertheless, the Torah says don't eat it. So, yes.
The famous word, somebody was going sick, and the doctor said you have to have a medicine that contains pork. So he told himself, maybe the sheikh should check the chazer.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yussel another time, please.
Tertius points out, by the way, by this logic, then, if you have an epidemic that's affecting goyim, then we have to fast and daven for it also, because all the more so, they're physiologically the same as us.
Yeah.
Actually, other Rishonim argue on that, the Ritva brings, the Ran brings, that maybe not necessarily, because when it comes to goyim, fine, you can say there's a different din on them than there is on Jews. Pigs, there's not a separate din on them. So there we are.
Who
says it was an Eretz Yisrael? It was in Bavel. Pashto, Sir Rabbi Huda lived in Bavel. Another case. Amr le Shmuel, ikim my son of Bechazoi. They told Shmuel that there was an epidemic going on in Bechazoi, which is an area nowadays part of Iran. Gozatani, so he declared a fast. Amr le, they said to Vahamarach, it's far away. What's the problem? Why are you worried about it here and now, duh? Amr, he says, Leka Mabra Hacha Depasikle. There's no water course, and there's no river or whatever in between that's stopping it from coming. Or another way is learning it. Rashi learns it as a question. Leka Mabra Hacha Depasikle. Is there no way of traveling from here to there that would stop it? Obviously, I mean, people are going from here to there. The epidemic will spread. Similarly, Amr Leila of Nachman, Ikam my son of Eretz Yisrael. They told him Nachman that there was a plague going on in Eretz Yisrael. Gazatani said, he declared a fast for that. Amr, because he said, if the mistress, meaning Eretz Yisrael, which is the mistress of the whole world, is getting hit, then how much more so the Shivcha, the countries of Chutzlaret? Then that's why. Time of Gvira or Shivcha. So you're telling me why they're declaring a fast in Babel because Babel was like a Shivcha compared to Eretz Yisrael, HaShivcha v'Shivcha Loi, which implies if it was two different countries that are both Shvachas, for example, you know, two different countries in Chutzlaret, then you wouldn't. V'ha'amr le'le Shmuel, ikam o'tzan ha'bechazoi, gazetanisa. But we see in Shmuel's case that there was a plague in Bechazoi, which is a different part of Chutzlaret, and yet he declared a fast. So it's not just a matter of Eretz Yisrael versus Chutzlaret, even within Chutzlaret itself. The answer is shiny hasan kivinika shayarta delavai va'asya bahadei. It's different. There are always caravans going back and forth from Bechazoi to Babel. So yes, the epidemic can spread b'derech hateva that way. Whereas Eretz Yisrael and Babel, there weren't regular passenger caravans going back and forth from one to the other. There's a big desert in between. So therefore, there's less of a chance that the epidemic would spread, but it's just a matter of beruchnius that if Eretz Yisrael is being struck, then Chutzlaret may follow. Since we were talking before about tzaddikim that saved their whole city, the great tzaddikim who saved their neighborhood or whatever, so now we're going to go to a similar story. Abba Umna have also a shlomim sifted at a kia kol yoyma. Abba Umna means bloodletter. The Abba, the bloodletter, used to get greetings from the sifted at a kia, from the yeshiva shomayla kol yoyma, every day. Ula Abaya kol maila yoyma to Shabbos. Abaya used to get these greetings every Erev Shabbos. The Rava Komaila Yamita Kippuri. And Rava got this kind of greeting from Shemayim, from the base in Shema, from the Yeshiva Shemayla, once on every Erev Yom Kippur.
We talked about that one a few weeks.
Yeah, we talked about that in Rosh Hashanah, yeah. So Habakkuk died to Abaya, Mishum to Abba Umna. So Abaya felt bad. Why don't I have this chus of Abba Umna? What do I need to do? What kind of Maisim Tovim is he doing that I can do? Amr Ulai, so he was told, you're not going to be able to do like what he's doing, because what he's doing has to do with his line of work, his bloodletting. And you're not a bloodletter, you're a Rosh Hashiva. So what did Abba Umna used to do? First of all, the Kiyava Abed Milsa, when he was letting blood, he would have the men and the women sit separately for tznius. Second of all, the isle lavusha de ispe karna, he had a gown made for his patient that had a karna, literally means a horn, like a tube sticking out of it. Dehavas bezia, which has a hole in it. Dehavas bezia ki kusilta, it has a hole in it, the size of the needle that he uses to draw blood. Ki havas astula itza, so when a woman comes to have bloodlet, have a malbishla, he'd put this gown on her, and then he'd stick in the needle through that tube attached to the garment. That way, right? Well, that way he doesn't have to look at her skin. Yeah. Another thing, the isle duchte ditzniya, he had a private place in his office. The shadi bepshiti, where people would put their money to pay for the treatment. The shakil, and then he would take it from there. So the islay shadi be, anybody who had money would put money there. The leslay lo mixif this way. If a person doesn't have money, it's in a private part of the office anyway. If somebody doesn't pay, nobody will know that he's not paying. And if a tzurim and abanan, if a tamid chacham came to him for bloodletting, agro l'minei l'shakil, first of all, he would not take any payment from him. And actually, that means Ben Yoyada says even if the guy could afford it, and even if the guy offered him the money, he'd return it to him.
Just like Mara said, the
usual rule is right that a doctor who works for free is worth nothing, but that's if he himself is voluntarily giving up his fee. That's different.
But if you want to give me some
free
services,
no. I'm all right. Yeah. And not only that, Ubasa Dekai, after the Talmud Chacham would get up, would finish the treatment, Yoiv Leib Shiti, then Abba Ubna would pay him. He'd give him some money. But Amalei Zil Bari Nafshach, and he'd tell him, go make yourself feel better. We know that even like nowadays, when you donate blood, afterwards you got to eat and drink to get your strength back. Same thing in those days with bloodletting. So you'd give him some money so he can go get himself some refreshments. So Abaya knew now of all the great things Abba Umna did, so he decided to test him with something. One time Abaya sent two Tamil Chachamim to check him out. So he had them sit down, Abba Umna, and he gave them to eat and drink, and he laid down for them, like mattresses or carpets or whatever on the floor for them to sleep on. In the night for them to sleep on. Latsafra, in the morning, kauchinu, they folded up these blankets, these expensive blankets, v'shaklinu, and they picked them and they took them, v'kamu v'nafku, and they got up and left, v'nafku l'hu l'shuka, and they went out to the marketplace. What? It seems they stole them. V'ashkechinu, and Abba Umna went out to the store, to the marketplace, and he found them. Amalei, they say to him, oh, l'shai me'mar, hechi shavu, would you please give us an estimate how much they're worth? they stole them from him and they're asking him, Amalei, yeah. So he says to them, hachi b'hachi, this is what they're worth. Amalei, they said, why? V'dilma shavu tvei. Why? Maybe they're worth more. They're trying to bargain with him. Amalei, he says to them, can't. B'hachi shaklinu. This is how much I bought them for. It was Amrulay, so they said, you should know, actually, Dachninu, Mishaklinu, no, actually, they're yours, and we took them from you. Now, how are they allowed to take them from you? You're not allowed to steal even temporarily, or as a joke, or whatever. There's a few different answers that Mepharshim give. One of them is, in this case, they're not doing it for the sake of stealing, they're doing it to test him.
Guess what?
To test how he's going to react, what he's going to say.
You cannot...
So there's a different answer that says that we see how Abba Umna was giving tzedakah to the poor people. He wouldn't take money from them and so forth. So they figured then that, you know, they're presenting themselves as two poor people. So yes, you know, he'll be willing to give them the blankets as a gift. He just wouldn't expect that they're going to turn around and sell them. So that's what they're going to ask him now. Like, you know, so what did you think when you saw that? That we took them, maybe you wouldn't have minded because we would have. So Omer Lei. So they said, "B'matusaminach, my hashatinan." Please tell us, what were you choshed of us? What were you choshed us in when you saw us trying to sell you back your own mattresses, your own blankets, and trying to get more money out of you? What do you think? Amar Lahu, he says to them, "I'm in a pidyon shvuyim ikla lahu l'rabbanan." I figure that the rabbanan have a situation of pidyon shvuyim, and Ben Yoyada adds maybe it's pidyon shvuyim involving their own families, and therefore v'achsifu l'meimali, so they're embarrassed to tell me. Amar Lahu, so therefore I figured you took them in order to sell them to raise money for pidyon shvuyim. Yeah. So they said to him, okay, well, now, you know, you obviously passed the test. Hashtun, please take them back. Amalei says no. Now, who shaitach asachtinu midatoy l'tzedaka? From that point, when I saw that they were missing, or according to that other explanation, from last night when I gave them to you, I was reading the siachdas from them that they're going to go to tzedaka. So go ahead and use them for tzedaka. So now Abaya understood why he deserves to have greetings from the Masivta Dirki every day. Well, next thing, Habakkuk Chal Shaddai to the Rava, Mishum Da Abaya. Rava felt bad about Abaya. Abaya has a schus to have a greeting from Shemayim every Erev Shabbos. I only have every Erev Yom Kippur. What can I do to be on his level? Amrulay, they told him, Misayach to Kamagnas Akula Kracha. You should consider it enough that you protect the whole city with your schusim. Rava lived in the city of Mechuza, where we learned in Rosh Hashanah there were many Rishayim over there. So the fact that he's able to protect the whole city with his schus, yeah. So that itself, you don't need a bigger schus to get to be greeted in Shemayim every day.
So if that's the case, how come you didn't have every day or something, invitation.
So one explanation is because if he's greeted, every time he's greeted, it's like all the people in the city are being greeted on his behalf. They don't deserve to be greeted every day. There's a few other explanations. One of them is, with another explanation is that he's being greeted Dafka and Erev Yom Kippur to show that it's in his chutz, that they're protected during the judgment of the Eved Shtah on Yom Kippur.
Other rabbi, why is he giving...
Every Erev Shabbos, because the people of the city weren't such people that he had to be. I mean, there is also the idea. Marsha points out that actually Rava ended up being a bigger Rosh Hashiva than Abaya. After Abaya passed away, all of his Talmidim came to learn by Rava. So therefore, in that sense, Rava is already greater than Abaya in that way. He has a much bigger crowd. So so he has that source as well.
Everybody, did you tell each other that
you're... I guess they may have told each other, or maybe just, I mean, each of them, Abaya and Rava are both tzaddikim, but Pasha said Rav HaKodesh. I mean, if they were able to hear the greeting in the Shemayim, they're probably able to hear who else is getting greeted. But maybe actually that's why. Maybe that's why Rabbeinu Gershom explains a little differently. Not that they're actually greeted, not that they get a Shalom Aleichem from Shemayim, but rather Mach Rizi Aleich Shalom Amirakiyah, that they announce in Shemayim about them that they have Shalom. Therefore, Abaya and Rava can both hear that every day that announcement is being made about Abba Umna, and for themselves only less off.
They can hear what's in it.
Yeah, I guess so.